Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello! Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for coming tonight, or today, depending on where you are on the planet. These are my new broadcasts. I am calling them Conversations with Golden Hawk, because in these conversations, in these shows, it is very much a conversation. We're not selling products. We're just sharing wisdom, information, perspectives, and I'm finding for myself that naming it Conversations with Golden Hawk is a lot more. It's a personal and a interpersonal experience, which since my sabbatical of 2013. I resonate much more with having these types of shows as opposed to, okay, this is black and white, and, it's either this way or that way. So with that being said, please help me welcome my beautiful guest and dear friend, Daniel Jacobs. Welcome, Daniel. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be here, Goldie, as always.
Right on, right on. We've always been conversational. So that's, but it feels really good, And blessed the topic of, multidimensional me. Good.
I was just thinking that after we finish talking tonight, we're going to change the name of the show to Another Reality Show and Another Reality and Another Reality and Another Reality.
And so on and so on.
And so on, et cetera.
Well, I think we're all right. You know what the truth is? It's happening anyway, so
yeah.
What I love is I believe that once we get a clarity and we get ourselves from a perspective point of view aligned with truly the magic of these times, it won't feel so so chaotic and disrupting. It'll feel more graceful and magical.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that comes and goes. I mean, it blows through our realities like a cooling wind sometimes, and at other times it's like the sun beating down on you, or it's the darkest midnight under the moon. But whatever it is, it's our experience. It's what we're going through. I think to myself sometimes, I wish I was more, calm and conscious, as opposed to being feeling so on edge at times, because my sensitivity every month my sensitivity gets more and more pronounced. So, and it usually goes along with the moon too. So women have their moon time and I have my moon time too. I'm very affected by the full moon. And so with that, and I think a lot of males are going through that as we allow our divine feminine to balance out from hyper-masculine to somewhere in the middle there. And sometimes it's really quite on edge, and then other times if it hits you just right, it's like, it's just like that perfect note in a symphony or that perfect bite of chocolate something or other, and it's
right.
Just like,
Well, and yet the truth is it really is, at least at this point in the journey, very much about both, right? Because it's exactly
Definitely.
What I've been living. I mean, that, the I'll be blunt, the bitchy Goldie and the graceful Goldie. And I'm telling you, I've had some eruptions, with people that, it's not even like it's a thought process. It's like their energy hits me, and I am, I literally just, I'm at 60 miles an hour in 3.9 seconds, you know, in a fit. I can tell you on several, well, not several, two occasions particular, people that I have come in contact with through work and things like that have literally called me a lunatic. They're like, you're a lunatic. And it's just easier for me to let them think that because their energy hits me very, what's that, friction. There's like a friction, and I'm like, better for them to think I'm a lunatic and leave me alone than trying to help them understand that I'm a sensitive person, that, you know, they're coming at me, you know, with an energy that I can't even control this.
Well, and it's interesting because that even that word lunatic has as its base, luna,
right.
Which speaks of the moon, you know.
Yes.
And so the... they used to say, you know, if you were ever working anywhere in the psych hospitals or anywhere where there's highly high-strung people, you know, they're dancing off the sprinkler heads on full moon night, you know.
Right on, right on.
And so that's what's interesting. And so what, you know, because as we'll see after we get into the topic a bit, a lot of what we've called psychological or mental disorders are actually simply shamanic consciousness as it's coming in, sometimes like a flood and sometimes like a slow seeping in or dripping in of other energy as it mixes and mingles with us. Sometimes it'll make us sick, sometimes, you know, and just not want to move, and sometimes it'll make us so hyper we can hardly contain ourselves in the body.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so it's, and it's interesting because I was once inspired to write that even as we look back on people who spoke about authoritatively about the fact that the earth was flat and believed it sincerely that you could, you know, if you went far enough, you would go off the edge and fall into whatever.
Right.
Just so there will be the same kind of thought about many of the prevailing paradigms of today, particularly having to do with the psyche and how we tend to view people who are different. And of course, we'll begin to balance that when more and more people become more and more different. Pretty soon there will be that that tipping point where all of a sudden different is the new normal, you know.
Right on.
But until then, these people are like scouts going off into the wilderness, and, you know, they always say you can tell the pioneers because they're the ones with the arrows in their back.
Exactly.
And whether it's pointed remarks or whether it's people pointing at you and saying, lunatic, you know, crazy person,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever, and just say, well, you wait.
Well, exactly. So is it based on the level of sensitivity? Is it in a direct correlation to almost a feeling of, it feels from my perspective, a personal perspective, I feel at times out of control, but only what's coming out of me. It's interesting because on the inside, I'm almost witnessing, laughing, going, oh, there you go again, babe. You know, you're rolling right now. All right. Keep
and that's exactly right. That the divine witness self, or what we call the watcher self,
okay.
That is sitting up on the fence, eating an apple, and watching the whole thing go on, is a powerful, powerful healing agent because this body has a mind of its own, and then the emotions that flow through it have minds of their own.
Okay.
And by the way, we aren't the emotions that flow through. Those are just like so much pollen in the air, you know, or so much rain or so much wind. It just comes on through. You can choose, you know, which one you want to hit your hand onto and take a ride, you know, just like they did in Back to the Future when he was on that skateboard. He'd just grab a car and he'd let the car tow him along. That's
right.
The way we are with emotion. We just sometimes will say, well, that looks like a cool ride, so I'll take it.
Okay.
Whether it's dramatic or whether it's hysterical or hilarious or whether it's, we call it falling in love, you know, or whatever it is, whether it's passion, we'll take the ride, because
right on.
That's what we're here for. We're here for experience, and we're here to log those experiences in. It's almost like our bodies are our recording devices for the all that is, and each one of us has this incredible viewpoint, incredible access point to what's going on. And there's no replacing your viewpoint of the way things are. I mean, you can duplicate things we do, like tasks or jobs we do, but no one can duplicate our viewpoint, our feeling, our exact experience of a situation. And that's
right.
What gets recorded and transmitted to the archives of all that is, and actually like little videotapes. You know, they're filed in the video store there. Of the multiverse, and will be available at any time for viewing by anyone who's interested.
Well,
so I hope you're not bashful, because a lot of people, I'm sure, will be checking your videos out.
Well, they certainly
will.
Have
you seen Goldie yet? You know? I saw it three times last week. It was great.
Yeah, I know I'm entertaining at the very least, so indeed, oh, right on.
Well, and so involved. I mean, you're so involved in your world, and it comes
right.
out of you in so many ways. It's
right
it's
on.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
But
it's
interesting, because when we talk about multidimensionality, we talk about what is a dimension, and you put that article out called Multidimensional Me, which speaks
yep.
a little bit about some of the meanings for the word dimension. Like, it's a measurement in many ways, and we think about 3D or the third dimension, height, width, and depth. And there's this thing called 2D, what they call flatlanders, which actually we, you know, to a degree, we make ourselves familiar with every day when we're doing computers, because you'll see height and width there, and only in under certain circumstances will they reproduce for you the feeling of depth, so that you get that 3D experience. We're doing it in the movies now and so on too.
Right,
but the third
right.
dimension really would be when a person looks at the height and the width, and then identifies with that as self, so
right.
that you become the third dimension for that particular thing. And whatever you allow into your visual field or your sensory field and is essentially you, you know, and a part of you that you wish to explore when you came here to 3D.
Right on.
And we get to focus there and take these wonderful videos so that we can have that to experience when we're in our more liquid state. To be in 3D is to be more solidified, but it doesn't mean we're more real because we're solidified. A lot of people say, well, this is the real world, but that's the imaginary world. See,
right.
once again, that's the kind of thinking that causes people to believe the world is flat.
Oh, right, huh?
You know, that's the world is flat thinking. What's really true is that every thought we think, every idea we have, every goal we make is a universe unto itself. Everybody's real as the universe, the physical surroundings you see around yourself. It's just vibrating at a different speed. It's vibrating so quickly that you may only be able to catch just a whiff of it as it goes by, or you may be able to dote on it a bit, but you don't have to go over and maintain it. You don't have to water it. You don't have to paint it. You don't have to do anything with it. You just think of it and it's there.
Right.
And people will say, well, it's not real. And that's the kind of dilemma that we find many of our folks who are locked up in the mental institutions. They know on some level that there's more there than just whims and ideas and fleeting perceptions, that they experience some of those dimensions every bit as real as people experience the physical dimension.
Right.
And in fact, you know, if you look across the room, You're not touching that except with your aura, like a bookcase, you know, the books are there. But if you're not touching a book, if you're not holding it in your hand, you know, how do you know that it isn't just like a digital outlay of books there? You know, we see that in our movies. They just green screen and then they put in there whatever they want to put in there. Because you're not touching it, you're just seeing it, and it gives you this sense of perspective. The NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming people, have taken that to a great science when they talk about adjusting your perspective inwardly, almost as an act of will, to be able to take figure and ground from art, from the art world, and say, which one is the figure and which one is the ground, you know? Which is the background and which is the subject of the painting.
Right.
And you can shift that. And when you shift that, your whole perception of it shifts. So when we get into this stuff, in a real way, we're playing with fire. Because
and you know,
a lot
I love
of people, a lot of people will even criticize you. The ones who realize what you're doing, there are a lot of people who go, huh, well, that's interesting, and walk away. But the ones who realize what you're doing, when you're mentally exploring these ideas, that you're also sort of, it's almost like you're invoking something to come into your life, your experience. It's almost like you're standing out looking up at the clouds and looking for some spaceship saying, come down, talk to me, land here on my lawn. Let me have an experience of you. Come on, you know. And then, of course, we get scared to death when something actually happens.
Some get very excited.
There you go. And a lot of people say, be careful what you ask for because you're likely to get it.
Well, right on. And there's meaning there's truth behind our intentions do create. I've lived that. I know that to be truth, so. But I like having that, you know, I like that influence.
Of course. Well, that's
yeah.
why I say people are going to be checking out the Goldie movies. you know, you're going to be on the New York Times bestseller list.
the New York Cosmos.
The New York Cosmos, exactly. So when we think about dimensions, it's interesting, too, as people grow older or if they go through certain activations of the psyche, they'll sometimes be diagnosed with this thing called dementia.
Okay.
And isn't that interesting in the fact that what usually happens is there's a slippage that happens between the frames of the film so that those people actually slip off into other places or other times. Oftentimes, usually if it's an elderly type person who's preparing to make transition, oftentimes they will go backwards. And you know how they talk about your whole life passing before your eyes.
Right.
Well, you know, it doesn't have to happen. Sometimes that can take years if a person wants to actually go through all those boxes and look at all those pictures and have those experiences. And so when folks are talking to people who have been diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's, oftentimes they'll be regressing back to key times in their lives so that they can, like, mark those as the significant landmarks and guideposts for the big changes that happened in their lives. And to the exclusion pretty much of the now, because what we think of as the now, it's interesting because what you think of as the now might not be the now to them. Because that's totally adjustable.
Yeah, no, I work with a woman who has been diagnosed, and everything you're saying, you know, totally holds. There's truth in that, you know. I mean, it's an interesting thing, and what I recognize is that she's not present. And but we have moments of lucidity, which are really fun because I find her moments of lucidity come when I talk to her about soul. She gets very interested in what I'm saying. So, of course, you know, I sprinkle that around her life to, in order to keep her, you know, kind of tethered a little bit.
Absolutely. And it also provides the beginnings of a rationale for a new way of looking at things, because when she talks to people in the traditional medical establishment, they look upon that as a disorder.
Absolutely.
As if order was the most important thing in people's lives.
Yeah.
When in actuality, order works for a while, and then you actually look forward to the invocation of chaos.
Exactly.
So you can mix it up, bring the passion, bring in the emotion, turn up the volume on things.
Exactly. Well said. Exactly.
Or turn up the Valium, as it were.
It depends.
So the idea of realizing that each emotion is actually a person, and you can walk along beside that person in your watcher self, your witness, and have a conversation with that person. And we did an adaptation of Howland Cedrus Stone's voice dialogue work in many of our events locally and at the conclaves we would have, where we would lay out three chairs, and there would be the, on one side there would be, let's say, the nurturing part of a person, and maybe on the other side there would be the critical part of a person.
Okay.
And then in the middle, there would be that watcher self or the aware self, which we call it.
Okay.
And we would let the subject, whoever the subject was who wanted to play the game, so to speak, the channel, if you will.
Okay.
They would start off in the middle chair and then move to another chair and close their eyes and kind of clear their mind. And allow or invoke that energy to come forth that is the nurturer or the critic or whoever, unedited, without any criticism, argument, just giving that part of self the floor to use in any way he or she wants to use it, whether it's a masculine or a feminine aspect.
Nice.
So the facilitator, who sits opposite the aware self, kind of holds that space while the person who's doing the exploring moves into these various parts of self. Hal and Sidra refer to them as selves, and they refer to their system called the psychology of selves. That the whole idea that we're one unified being is true, but we're a unity of a complexity or a diversity. So the recognition of that, the unity gives us a place to come back to, like that aware self in the middle.
Right.
The diversity allows us to take our little forays off into the side roads of life, the rabbit trails, so to speak.
Yeah.
And explore, like you do in the woods. I know you love to go out in the woods, and there's nothing better than, here's a trail I haven't gone down. Let's try this and see what's
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I love getting lost on purpose. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So we would do that, and the most important thing about it is that whatever self comes out, you will find that it's very important not to argue with them or try to convert them to some attitude or viewpoint, but rather to interview them in a very loving, gentle way.
Okay.
You know, like, when did you first come into Goldie's life? You know, and are you the nurturer? So are you the nurturer? When did you first come into Goldie's life, and what was happening at that point in time? And if a person does not edit, but also doesn't force, but just simply allows flow, a whole lot of information can come out.
Nice.
But more than that, energy moves tremendously. So that when that part of self that may have been held in the background for a long time is given a forum to be able to speak its mind, his mind, her mind, it's like something opens up and many pains go away, dysfunctions in the body, things that have been, that are often the result of trapped energy, get just handled as a result of allowing those parts of self to speak.
Right on. Right on.
So that's a tool. And we actually did one when we were in Glastonbury called Hip Hopping Through the Fourth Dimension, where rather than moving from self to self, we, as we would move from the center chair to the to one of the side chairs, we would just spin the dial of where we, where in history we were, close our eyes and say, okay, where are you?
Wow.
And the person would begin talking about, well, I'm in the 15th century, and I'm on a horse, and I'm riding up to this castle. You know,
nice.
And it's, blah, 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 blah. It's interesting,
right,
because...
Right.
When people give themselves credibility, when they give themselves confidence in what comes to them, they come out with all sorts of stuff that that can sometimes be unnerving, but most of the time it's quite exciting.
I
agree. Like, my gosh, I did that or I said that. Where did that come from?
Right.
And so that was another application, again, of this principle. Laying out the chairs, or where in the room would you like to be? I'll oftentimes say that to someone who we're doing a process with, because this self may not like sitting in either one of those chairs. As a matter of fact, you get to your rebel self, they may go sit up on the whatnot shelf,
right,
just to be there.
Right, right.
Now, the interesting part is these are all disciplines that we do to introduce form to the formless. Thing like, you know, a disciplined meditation time. You know, you go to the same place every day for a period of time, sometimes just a minimal period of time, sometimes more if you feel like it. But mainly just to get yourself acclimated to the idea that this is what we're going to do. We're going to come here and we're going to open ourselves up to whatever's there and we're going to just entertain it. Rather than being busy, being human doings,
right,
we're going to allow ourselves this time to be.
Right on.
And I guess it was the Buddha that said, was it the Buddha? It was somebody who's really into Zen who said, always meditate at least 20 minutes a day. If you don't have time to meditate 20 minutes a day, then meditate for an hour.
Gotta love Zen.
Yeah, gotta love that. Because obviously you're too busy.
Right, right, right.
But these disciplines, you know, they set up a circuitry, a kind of a neural circuitry, a network of receptivity and transmission. Like when I began writing from the Reconnections back in 91, for some reason, this one morning, I sat down and wrote as though I was writing a letter to myself and my universe. And it always started off, my dear friends. And it was like, my dear friends was a cue for that spigot to turn on and for the energy to flow. And
nice.
From that point on, I would follow certain things, and then it would usually end with end transmission. You know, like,
okay,
just
yeah,
like they do in, you know, Western Union or whatever. Stop.
Oh,
and,
right.
End
right.
message.
Right.
And that worked for me. I mean, whatever works for people. But the interesting point is when that part of the being, which is in the shadows, or you might say the other side of the mountain, the shadow self, it begins to understand that you're interested in hearing, knowing, exploring some of the things that go on there, and not just paying it face value, but that you'll actually allow yourself to be changed by what you experience.
Oh, so that true,
becomes,
Daniel.
That becomes a lightning rod whereby these things start to come to you, and you never know when they're going to come or what they're going to do.
How
you just
fun!
Do.
Yeah. Yes. No.
And it makes it difficult when you're trying to serve people in some kind of an organized format. I come from a tradition of channeling. I was back in the 70s and 80s, and you know, Seth and Lazarus and all those folks.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
That began doing that, and we came from a tradition of what was once called trance channels, where they basically went away in their description of it, many of their descriptions of it, while
right.
this other entity came in, you see, and spoke, and then the entity would leave, and it was obviously a trusted part of the community, the spiritual community, because
right.
the people would come and listen, and the fellow would care to get out of the way and let it happen.
Right.
And they had, oftentimes, as Jack Purcell described in his experiences with Lazarus, where he just doesn't know what's going on. He needed, particularly the first time, he needed to have someone read back to him what went on, and he was quite shocked at what happened. And this oftentimes happens also with people who've gone through trauma injuries, where there's a portion of themselves that is in shock or is in some kind of degree of trauma or pain that's stored away in a secret space and is given guardianship over that part of the soul. And then at a later point in life, when it seems safe or desirable to bring that forward, they start popping forward too in ways sometimes that are surprising to the individual. It's like, where did that come from? Or how did that happen?
Right.
And it's gotten a lot of press and it's generated a lot of confusion and fear for some people. For others, particularly when you've begun to experience that to a degree, I've always considered myself to be a conscious channel. I haven't had anything, although there are times when if I get really excited, like you're talking about, you know, things will come out of me, not necessarily in the name of the reconnections, but they'll come out of me and it's like, oh, well, hello, where did you come from?
Right, right.
And I've gotten,
before.
You know, affectionate with those parts of myself.
Right on.
Not completely. I'm not completely comfortable with every part of me, but I'm getting more and more so the further along I go.
You and me both. Right on. Right on.
Yeah. And so there are times when you go, oh, I'm embarrassed by that.
Right.
But then there are other times where you're going, wow, I'm stoked. I didn't know I had that in me.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So
let me
ask
like
you.
For you?
I want to ask you something because this is based on I know my audience. My audience, I think, would be asking more the question: if you could help people to understand almost how to invoke this process to start.
There are many ways.
Okay.
There are many ways to do that.
Okay.
There was a woman who put out, I'm trying to think of her name, but she put out a book at one point called Ecstatic Trance Channeling, or it was
okay.
Ecstatic Trance Work. But what was interesting is she, I think her name was Barbara something, but she was, she was exploring in some of these ancient digs, archaeological
okay.
digs, and she found these little figures, like they
okay.
were, some of them were carved from wood and some of them were made from stone. Some were actually carved into the stone like murals.
Okay, oh wow.
And she noticed that they were like animals or people, but unusual people, you know, and that they were in particular positions. And it wasn't long before she realized that many of those artifacts were actually ancient tools for invoking energy. And in fact, if a person were to replicate in their, ecstatic trance postures was the word.
Okay.
And it was a yogic type thing. She said, if you put yourself if you look at the figure and you put yourself in the physical posture of that figure, that you would call to that figure. You can do it mentally, you can do it just as a point of desire, or just by simply taking on that posture, you would invoke that, say like a bear. You could invoke the bear energy by taking the position that was that the figure was in.
Okay.
Or if there's one that particularly speaks to you, if you see a bear in a particular position that goes, wow, that's a bear to me. Or
right,
for me,
right.
I'm really big into lions, you know. I'm a lion guy.
Right.
So when I see the lions, I'm a Leo, and when I see lions, but there's when you take that position, then suddenly that energy fills you. I mean, she has case histories in the book where she talks about, you know, these incredible activations people have had as they've taken on some of these ancient postures,
nice.
Particularly in the landscapes where they are. So ecstatic trance postures, that's an unusual one. That's why I brought it up first, because people, many people don't know about that.
Indeed.
They know about drumming, you know.
Okay.
They know about conscious breath work.
Okay.
They know about meditation, you know, watching, the watch yourself, watching thoughts.
Okay.
They know about either walking or running, putting yourself in a kind of a repetitive type of a physical exertion.
Okay.
To allow yourself to achieve that equanimity. There's actually even a collection of tapes, sound technology created by Robert Monroe, who was the original writer who first got us into astral travel. He was the primary astral travel guy, and he developed this technology called HemiSync, where he would put these headphones on and you would play these binaural beats of tones where they would skip from ear to ear and therefore balance your brain so that you could drop down into that, I guess it's the theta state. And I've done
or delta.
You know, you can go deep. And we've had weekends where we would just spend the whole weekend listening to tapes, then going into meditation and coming back and talking about our journeys and our experiences.
Very nice.
So, you know, these are some things, but I prefer the more authority a person gives to him or herself to trust their own inclinations and their own observations about themselves, what works, what doesn't work. The more they allow themselves to exclude from their lives things that dull them, their senses, or somehow assault them in one way or another, whether it would be a friend who's always wanting things from you and draining things off of you, or another person who's always in whose presence, they may not even be conscious of what they're doing, but in whose presence you feel diminished.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yes. Yes.
Or it could be just extraneous activity. Some people are so busy, 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 that there's really no space left for them to contact some of these elements of self.
Mm.
And so they, as they begin to, you know, peel away those layers of insulation from their contact with the inner self, and they make their journey a personal one and a solitary one. Of course, that's what people are afraid of, many of them. We all get afraid of the idea of being loners. Gee, I wonder if I'm going to end up completely alone if I continue on in some of my supporting my unusual ways. But the idea is that it isn't so much that you're alone. It's there. The observation finally comes to you that nothing is so lonely than to be in a room full of energies that are not ambient at all with your nature.
Exactly.
You know, it's like they press in on you like walls of a room.
Yes.
That are squeezing in on you, and feel like you just have to get out the door so you can breathe deeply. And it's nothing judgment or fault about the other people. It's just that this isn't my place. This isn't where I'm supposed to be right now.
And would you say that that experience seems to be more prevalent in the present times?
More and more. I'm talking to people, and I'm talking about folks who are who have taken serious steps in days past to follow after a spiritual experience and make it personal for themselves, unique to themselves. More and more I'm finding selectivity, at least for periods of time. Now, there are times when we're led back into the community, back into the mainstream.
Right.
And it's different when you go back into the mainstream and you become the guiding purpose. Like your purpose moves through that area and it becomes a force to be reckoned with.
Right.
As opposed to when you're going through your time of peeling away, then everything around you becomes forces to be reckoned with, and you still can't find you. You got to be able to find your own beacon inside.
Absolutely.
Before you can be a beacon for people outside.
Absolutely. Beautifully said again. Exactly. I agree. Yep.
So the decision to go deeper can be a decision that, as I was saying earlier in the broadcast, we were talking about the ones who listen to these kinds of conversations, who have read some of Carl Jung's works and many of these others who have done mystical things, you know, who've been, you might say, modern-day mystics.
Okay.
And back in her day, you know, Blavatsky and many of those.
Right.
Were looked upon with great suspicion, also admiration, but suspicion because, you know, where's he going to go? What's going to happen to him? At one point, Carl Jung, who came forth from his own, we call it a hermetic or hermit-type experience, he came forth with his what's considered probably by most his greatest work, the Red Book, which was a book of illustrations and also insights that came from his personal journeys within.
Oh, nice.
He nearly went insane when he was doing that. And
right.
That's the key, you know. The closer you can get to what you think of as insane, the more juice you get from
right.
that sense
right.
of release, that sense of availability. I once wrote a thread in the discussion group called Just a Little Crazy, in which basically I said, you know, in order for you to get the deeper things of what's going on in the universe, you know, you have to sometimes go into a realm that's considered a little crazy.
Exactly.
And sometimes people will even look at you and think you're a lot crazy, depending on where they are in the spectrum. And again, all they're doing is really projecting their process onto you. Basically,
right.
when a person looks at you and says, you're crazy, what they're saying is, that's what I would think about myself if I was doing what you're doing.
Well, right on. Right on.
That's what they're saying. It's as if they're talking in the mirror saying, if you do that, you're crazy. And
no,
that's good.
And, well, it's interesting, too, because I find that, like this last year, I have played with anger. And it's just like you said at the beginning, it wasn't like what started me on this anger kick was not something that, if I look back at it now, it's like, I don't, you know, I wouldn't have got that angry about that. But a year ago, it sent me into a rage, and it has literally become an identity now that after a year of it being, it was conscious. It wasn't subconscious. You know, it's like, and I did. I went into my hermit state because it's like the world doesn't seem to want to accept anger, or at the very least, I was afraid to accept my own anger in the world.
Right.
You know, and it's an interesting thing because exactly like you said, then you show some anger, it's like, you know, and you know, people are like, are you going to hit me? And I'm like, no, I'm just going to yell a lot. my anger doesn't reach violent physically. I've had New York parents, man. We yell.
Yeah.
So, but they're so used to this contained volume in voice, and it has not been my experience. This 2013 was all about raising the roof with my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so be it. And that's what I did.
Well, and when you raise the roof, you're lifting up your ability to be able to go up, you know, raising the roof.
Right.
Taking the roof off, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
There was a time I was in the middle of a night meditation, and I felt the guides come in, and what I could sense was, you think you're looking to be satisfied? You can kiss that goodbye. And I go, what do you mean? What do you mean? I said, well, think of it. You know, the idea of being satisfied is that of a cup that's filled to the brim, like being fulfilled, you know. It's a cup that's filled to the brim.
Right.
But with the energy you're working with now, when you get the cup to the top, it just gets to be a bigger cup.
Right.
You know, and it just keeps going. It keeps going. So the idea of satisfaction, just like the idea of an end to the story, there's a beginning, the middle, and an end.
Right.
In the multiverse, there are no ends to the story. Those are just marker places. You know,
exactly.
Like it goes on and on from there. And it also bears mentioning that when we talk about the way the multiverse operates, it's very much like that autofill feature that we see on the computers, where you start a sentence and it finishes itself based on where you're going.
Right.
If you have an intention that goes out from yourself, I would like to be, you know, a teacher. I would like to teach.
Okay.
The multiverse fills in that intention in every possible way, imaginable and then some, so that there's a dimension for every variation of Golden Hawk as a teacher.
Nice.
That you can imagine. You're teaching kindergarten kids, you're teaching first grade, you're teaching second grade, you're teaching college, you're teaching an entire coliseum full of people, you're teaching one person, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's all there. The recons once said, you know, you don't create your universe out of nothing. You create it out of the everything that's already there. And then you pair it back to what you want to experience in any given moment. It's like taking a bite out of an apple, you know. Only the apple is like 5 million miles big.
Now that,
you take a cup of water.
What was that movie, The Giant Peach guy? Remember
James and the Giant Peach.
It would be Goldie and the Giant Apple.
Yeah, the Big Apple. Like,
the Big Apple. They
call it the Big Apple.
That's very good.
So
that
autofill feature, at one point I was told that, or basically told myself, it was something I was keeping from me, see?
Mm.
Like the reconnections described themselves when they came into my universe, that they said, were all those parts of your expanded self that you had to forget about in order to become Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
We've never been that very far from you, just far enough. And within us are all those things, attributes, memories, bits of knowledge, abilities that you laid aside when you came here to do this. And whenever you need them, we're here to give them to you and take them back, also to refile them like librarians, if you will, in the Akashic Library.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So at one point they said, you're all the time trying to finish things. You know, you've got this completion thing going on. When in fact, you know, this life you're living is more like a summary or a survey course of many of the paths you've traveled. And so when something comes up, you follow that lead as far as it goes. But when it stops, it's like you get off the bus, you get a transfer, and you jump on another bus.
Right.
Meanwhile, the bus that you were on continues on to its destination and fulfills itself in every way imaginable. So the idea where people say, well, I had that idea, I followed it through, but it never came to pass. That's not true.
They just didn't experience it? Is that, it didn't come
and
to their
they'll
experience?
Be able to experience it in every way necessary. This is why when people say 3D is going away and we're going to float off and be, we're going to live our lives as a big glob of etheric goo. We're going to just
yeah, that doesn't even sound attractive
the
to me, by the way. Just like,
you know, the nothingness. Well, yeah. if it was a big glob of dollop of whipped cream, I mean, I could do that. You know, or the meringue on top of a pie or something. That would be
okay.
Nice.
Okay.
But the idea is that 3D, when you go through the fourth dimension, which is time, so you got height, width, depth, time, the fourth dimension.
Okay. Right.
So you have this incredible idea of then and now. Even though then and now exist now, you put it in such a way that you get to see it sequentially, so you have it as a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's like, you know, cook a meal and you serve it, whether it's the salad first and then the entree and then the dessert, you know. And so
right. You
serve it to yourself while you're here, but that doesn't necessarily mean that in another dimension you might be eating dessert first and have the salad at the end, you know.
Okay. Okay.
Or you can rearrange everything so it's just a big smorgasbord and you have a little of this and a little of that and a little of this.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that each item on the smorgasbord doesn't have universes that completely explore that idea to the completest extent it can. So that here's a light, you know, so you have the idea of a lamp. And here's
okay.
all these different lamps. And then there's candles. And then there's strobes, and then there's spotlights, and, you know, it goes on and on. Christmas lights. Isn't any,
right.
every kind of light
right,
imaginable,
right.
see? And they're all there like clip art, cosmic clip art,
okay.
ready to be cut and pasted into your universe if you so desire. And
okay.
so in many ways, that's what happens. You know, you go off into this other dimension, and you just pick it. You know, pick a plum off that tree and bring it over here and cook it for lunch. So this
okay.
becomes then
okay.
your recipe.
Okay.
Go ahead. What
okay.
were you
say? I have a question. Now, earlier in the broadcast, you said that our emotions are not ours. So are these emotions not from, like, the other clip art experiences? What, like, isn't it ours, but maybe not from this dimension? I'm a little confused on that.
Well, and the answer to that is yes to everything you just said.
Oh, I don't even know what I just said.
Some of them are interdimensional. Some of them are interdimensionals that are just passing through. What I said, I didn't say our emotions aren't ours. I said our emotions are not us. They are beings unto themselves. We can identify with that being. We can join up with that being. But that cluster of beings and travel with it for a while. Like you said, 2013 was your time to run with the Rumblers, you know,
exactly.
to go out and
yes.
do West
yes.
Side Story and all that, you know, the Jets and the Sharks.
Right.
Yeah, and so then there might be a year where it's all about love, or and there's another year where it's all about curiosity and just trying on new things.
Okay.
Each of those elements that come through, like one day you might just all of a sudden be in a room and you're feeling incredibly aroused, horny, if you will.
Okay.
And you wonder where that came from, and you might actually see it embodied in somebody as they're walking by, and you realize that woman just brought her horny in and gave it to me, you know.
Okay, right.
And yet that person is you, see, because she's in your universe, or he's in your universe, and you get the opportunity. You can either give it back, we call that fragmenting it out or fragging it out back to them, or you can take it in and experience it personally, first person.
Okay.
So again, that's a dimension of you. And this is a dimension of you, and then there's another dimension of you we call third person, which is things you can see and experience but which have no contact with you. They just are doing what they're doing, like stories you see on CNN. you were mentioning Chile, these earthquakes and these places that are happening in Chile.
Yep.
You own that. You can own that as self. You can say, what's this rumbling that's happening inside me manifesting itself as Chile? And say, I might put too many chili peppers in my chili. That's why I'm rumbling.
Yes, my rumblings are getting hot.
We did a series called Spirituality and Sex, where it talked in the first chapter about many of the rumblings and things that are happening on the earth are happening because people have taken their sexuality and their passion aspects and their desires, and they buried them so deep inside themselves for fear that someone will find out that they either have a need or that they are this or that they are that and so on, rather than just letting them be.
Right.
And so suddenly there's this collision or this rumbling way down deep below, and you could say, well, that's the collective psyche as it experiences its shadow self bumping up against each other.
Yeah, right.
And the guide said the more people begin aligning themselves in the physical with what they're experiencing, with some sense of discernment, of course. You know,
right.
I mean, you can go radical, you can go too radical.
Yeah.
And get yourself in a lot of trouble. Or you can slowly open the spigot, or you can take the cap off the radiator and it doesn't have to burn your face off when the steam comes out, you know.
Right.
But sooner or later, you're going to have to do that or it's going to blow the radiator completely up. So.
Which is an experience also of itself. You know, that's, in my humble opinion, though, that's the unconscious experience of change as opposed to the conscious experience of change. But either way.
Right. And oftentimes, the unconscious and subconscious aspects are given more power because
Absolutely.
It's their time to be known.
Absolutely.
And where the conscious self can repress only so long, and then all of a sudden, you know, the
Kaboom.
Bolts start popping off and
exactly.
the dam opens up and the water comes seeping through.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what, it's interesting when someone says to someone, damn you, you know, it's like, what I'd like to do is contain you so that you will stop being yourself in my presence, which activates me and makes me remember things and blah, 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 blah. You know.
And because you might be ready to shift, but I'm not ready to shift. And
exactly.
I'm seeing that a lot with the couples that I know, where one is more consciously doing some integrative work and the partner is then having their own integration simply because the shifts that the partner who's doing the work is going through,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
by proxy, including, mm-hmm. by the way, my own relationship with my boyfriend. You know, it's mm-hmm. It's really quite a... It's quite amusing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's how
and
I
it's,
see it.
It's particularly interesting when people can reach a level of trust with each other where they're able to allow parts of themselves to come through that would normally be scary if you encountered it first, you know, just by yourself.
Right.
But because that person is there and they can hold on, once again, they're holding on to the idea of you as a balanced, sane person, while you get to be a little insane at a given point in time.
No, and that absolutely, I am grateful that there is, I have a protection here to go crazy, to be quite honest, and I'm so grateful for that. So
in a very real way, dreaming is that for us every night. When we let go and go off into the dream state, we're giving our mind permission to wander and to experience. And some of us have very, very vivid dreams. Some of us have very vivid daytime dreams,
yep.
what we call lucid dreams, where, in fact, yep. some part of the dream has to come up to you and say, by the way, this is a dream.
Yes.
Because it's so
yes.
real, you know.
Yes.
It's so real.
Well, lucid
and once again,
is...
that's an experience of multidimensionality, too.
Yes. Yeah, when my mother died, the first time I saw her in a dream, because I could hug her, I went lucid because I went, oh, okay, you're dead, but hey, I'll take the hug, man. Let's chat. Let's, you know, but I literally became lucid because it was one of my greatest fears was that when she died, I would never be able to hug her again.
Hmm.
And then there it was in the dream. And we actually had a very lucid, you know, part of the redundancy, conversation. It was, you know, all about her pain had left. She was no longer in the body and she felt good and the cancer was gone. And, you know, it was quite healing for me.
I had a similar experience the night after my mother died. She had a heart attack and died suddenly while taking care of my dad, who was dying of cancer. This was back in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
And she just stressed out to a point where she just went, you know.
Wow, yeah.
And so then I flew down from Seattle. I was up here. I lived up here and flew down to California where they were. My sister had been helping and caring for them and so on. But I went down there, and so I was staying with Dad. And I was actually sleeping in her bed. They had two beds, and so I was sleeping in her bed. And I was listening to him breathe, and I could tell his breathing was labored because he had lung cancer. I was just thinking to myself, is he going to make it through the night? And suddenly this energy came over me so vividly. It was like someone just washed over me. Mm. And it was her. I mean, it was everything about her. It was
mm-hmm.
her smell. It was her feel. It was her
exactly.
essence. And it was like I said, Mom, you know, and all I could hear, it was like she spoke to my mind. She
right.
said, I love you. It's going to be all right. Goodbye. And my sister, who was quite clairvoyant, she's on the other side now, too. She passed over in 2006. She had several lucid interactions with my mom. I only have them selectively. She had them all the time.
Okay.
So she was far more clairvoyant than me.
Right.
And, but I do get, you know, I get bits and pieces, and that's usually what works best with my nature, is to get little bits and pieces, and then I put together the picture, and it's like
right.
a puzzle.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Exactly.
We all have our modalities, primary modalities that we use.
And I've heard two. There's like four or six, and there's usually two that are that's just what I heard. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, that's true. The four that I know about, there may be more. You know, clairvoyance, clairaudience, which clear hearing,
okay.
clairsentience, and claircognizance, which is just knowing.
Exactly.
They're knowing.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know if you've heard of any more. I'd be interested to know. But those are the big four.
Yes, I don't know where you know what I was thinking? Sixth sense is what I was thinking. That's where the number six came from.
Well, there could be.
No.
Yeah, that's right. Sixth sense. And I guess there could be clear tasting and clear smelling.
Well,
you know,
right,
a little aromatherapy
that's
there.
That's true. Or even smell. Tell me, smell doesn't throw you into a whole reality if you smell something from, you know, like bread baking from, you know, that your grandmother used to bake or even a cigar if, you know, you
yeah.
had an uncle who passed who smoked a cigar, whatever. I mean, meaning they don't have one for the smell or the taste. That's interesting.
Yeah. But yet they're very powerful modalities for working.
Absolutely.
Mostly,
absolutely.
Though, those are, I think I call them like ancillary tools. You know, they make things more vivid. Ancillary means like on the side. A little something on the side, as opposed to primaries, which would be the vision or the feeling or the so on. The more you get, I guess, as Obi-Wan said, your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them.
And
it's the same thing with clairaudience. And yet those are the things we really think of when we think of hearing voices or seeing visions, having visions, the sight.
Yep, yep.
But as we get more into clairsentience, where we just feel things, it becomes more and more reliable, from my experience, because it's so full-bodied, so omnibus within itself. It's not just an eye or a vision or a sound. It's the whole experience of it, and along with it goes the idea of what's my body wanting to do with this. Is it inclined to go towards something or away from it?
Right.
Is it inclined to open or run away or close up?
Mm.
And then the clear knowing is probably the most amazing, because when Oftentimes when spirit gives us messages, it won't come sequentially like in words or sentences. It'll just come like one big, you know, falls on you.
Packet. Yep.
And you have the whole
packet
thing.
Of energy. Yep.
Packet. Very good word. Very good word.
Yep.
And you you just know it all there. And then,
yep.
Of course, you have to downstep it into a sentence if you're going to share it with somebody. A sentence, yep. Or a picture or a series of pictures.
Right.
But it becomes, you know, it has to be translated, if you will. And oftentimes channels are spiritual translators. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're antennas, which are kind of interesting too. Because sometimes antennas don't know what they've picked up or, you know, what they're supposed to do with it. They're like little R2-D2 in Star Wars who had a message for Obi-Wan and he didn't know what it was. He just said, I've got this message for Obi-Wan. So we're carrying these little bundles of energy. And we're looking for our Obi-Wan so that we can, you know, give them their download and get on with it.
Mm.
And so there are people who have that gift. I call it the gift of transposition, where they bring things from more expanded realms of vibration into the more specific or the more solidified realms. And they'll need someone to translate it from the energy they carry into the words and phrases that people would recognize.
Right on, right on.
And so that becomes a really cool situation too.
These are all cool situations. Do you want to take a break?
Yeah, I'll go get myself a cup of tea. I'll be right
okay,
back.
All right. We're gonna take a yep, I've got a great song. It's all queued up. We're just going to take a quick break because, you know, there's a lot of talk going on. So be back in like 5 minutes. Does that work for you, or you want 10 minutes?
No, 5 minutes is great.
5 minutes is great.
Just,
okay, so...
I already got it cooked. I just need to pour it.
Okay, right on, love.
All right.
All right, so I'll talk to you in a few minutes. And for everybody's listening pleasure, I'm going to play... actually, a fabulous song that's 5 minutes exactly. So enjoy this song, and we'll see you back here in 5 minutes.
Celebrate and have a good time.
Okay, but I want to give everybody your websites, the two of them, reconnectionsplural.net and starchildren.com, which are just filled with amazing articles and information, wisdom, shares, and you're very interactive. I like when I read your stuff. It's always encouraging people to, you know, even on your Facebook page as well, you know, to share their experiences with you, which is very warm and inviting energy.
It's particularly nurturing for me because I notice a lot of people who do the work, you know, translation work, will like keep distance, you know, from people. But I actually thrive off interact with people and always have. And so that's why if it gets too big or it gets too remote, then I lose interest. And so Facebook has been a particular blessing in that way. I like the format. I like the internationalness of it. I've had an opportunity to meet a lot of my dear, like, South American friends and people from Europe. And it's just beautiful because I have some dear people who also translated a lot of the channelings into other languages.
Nice.
And so we have a section on the site that's under the archived writings where there's a Spanish portal and a French portal and an Italian one, and we just opened a Russian one.
Wonderful.
And so there's opportunities for – it's interesting as these people open themselves up to being channels for the channeling, so to speak. They're putting them into their language. They're putting them into their culture. To see the wonderful response that comes back. It's very, very gratifying, very exciting.
Outstanding. I'm celebrating with you.
it brought back memories of my days of being a DJ. I used to do weddings and office parties and things when I was going through school, and we would always play that song. That was always the first one at after a wedding was Celebrate. So,
And it's such a great song.
I was up there remembering my younger days when we were...
Nice. Well, and it's all about, you know, come together. I was like, oh, yeah, exactly. Unify and integrate. And, it was enough.
We had a line dance we used to do to Disco Inferno. And one day, the guy who owned the company, one day he put everybody together in a line dance. They were in a hotel. And there was a wedding going on down in another one of the banquet rooms. And so he just simply took a line dance of his people to Disco Inferno, went down, picked up a line of them, and brought them back over to his party.
Truly integrating.
I'm sure the DJ over there didn't appreciate that. But.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's all in good fun, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was wanting to talk also a little bit about the media, the way the media is doing multidimensionality, because it's busting out all over, whether it would be exploring the cosmic aspect of it. I remember there was a movie that was out, several years ago called Sliding Doors.
Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah, it's a great movie.
Talked about dimensions, interdimensional stuff. There was one also that came to mind recently called Millennium. It was a sci-fi movie about these group of interdimensional beings who would come upon a situation where there was an impending disaster, like a plane crash.
Okay.
And they would hook up a portal, and they would pull the people that were about ready to get destroyed out through the portal and into another dimension, and then they would bring bodies in that were you know, like makeshift bodies that they had made and lay them around so that those were left for people to ponder over while these folks were already off and running around. And I was noticing when we had all the hubbub about Malaysian Flight 370, where the lost plane, you know.
Yeah.
I had a friend on Facebook who sent me over one of the channelings from Susie Ward, who channels the Matthew books.
Yep.
And I appreciate that for two reasons. One is that he was her son, I believe, and she's bringing through her. He passed over, and she's bringing through messages from him, and he's a very sweet energy, very approachable, very, and when women do channel males, they come through that way, very, very sweet. Except for Jane Roberts, I guess Seth was rather interesting and cantankerous at times, but he was also funny, very funny.
I tried to read a Seth book or, you know, even just open the book, and it seemed that at the time the energy was very heavy, and that it was the languaging seemed so heavy is really the best way to explain it, as opposed to like the Cryon material, which is kind of where I came in, and that was still scientific and stuff, but it just seemed easier for me to comprehend anyways.
Well, and that's due to the shift in the raising of the vibration of the planet.
Right.
From the 1970s, when she brought through that information, and to when
Lee Carroll
is bringing through Cryon material today.
Right.
It's the difference between one of those huge, boring drill bits going through the side of a mountain and how tough it has to be because of the density of the consciousness versus the diamond drill that can be used today because people have... their consciousness has gone up in this. They used to say that that was one of the reasons why Nostradamus is quoted as being, you know, he saw all of this disaster happening at the end of time. It was because he was viewing the future from a density where there was no way he could conceive of anybody surviving the acceleration of energy that he was seeing.
Oh, huh.
To him, it looked like a big explosion. But once you get here and you yourself accelerate along with the world, then it not only doesn't blow up, it actually shines, you know. So, but from that density, it must have looked like, you know,
an explosion.
Atomic bomb going off, you know.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Right on.
During this time of Malaysian Flight 370, I think these big mysteries are going to be happening on the planet more and more because it sets the mind to pondering. And when people start pondering, then they become available to other possibilities, imaginations, and contact with the multiverse. And so somebody had sent me this channeling that he sent through in March about Malaysian Flight 370, and it was very similar to, in somewhat in form, to that movie Millennium, in the fact that when they saw, there was actually a double channeling. There's Matthew talked a little bit, and then Ashtar from the Ashtar Command came through and spoke about what happened to the plane. And so he's basically saying that the plane was encountered by extraterrestrial or interdimensional beings and taken to a different dimension, a different place.
Oh, wow,
and
okay.
They were in essence well, let's see, it says here, the plane was dematerialized after all had disembarked. They were met by some of our crew members who had taken on Earth body appearances and garb to ease the newcomers' first moments in their new land and taken to what you would call an exclusive resort. It is the starting over point for all Earth souls who are rescued by other civilizations, and there have been many of those occasions in your past century. And so then he talks about what happened at the resort, and of course, the questions came through, will we ever see these people again? And his response at that point in time was, no, because it was not able, the plane was not able to be saved. Excuse me one second. The plane was not able to be saved, but they were able to be translated, if you will, into this other environment. And so the person who had sent this to me said, what do you think? And that's okay. Not an unusual experience for me, because having been out there for a while and having done a lot of speculation in my writings and discussions, a lot of people will write me and say, here's this, what do you think? Here's that,
yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah, right on.
And my my response to it at that point in time was, cool. You know,
I love it.
And it,
it
was basically, I was aware of the fact that whenever we get specific about the outcome of a situation that has the possibility or potentiality of multiple outcomes, what
yeah.
we're doing is basically following that through to the end of its line, the end of its journey. But we realize at the same point that there are many, the way the multiverse acts, there is the autofill that factor that fills in all the other possible probable realities that could also be true.
Right.
And so really, when you're talking about the multiverse, there is no falsehood in the multiverse. There may be things that seem out of place in our three-dimensional reality. They may seem either irrelevant or actually antithetical to what we're trying to accomplish, almost like they're obstacles or enemies to us.
Okay.
But in fact, many of them are just kind of, we call them free radicals when we talk about chemistry.
Okay.
But they're like energies that are just coming and going, doing their thing. Some of them aren't even aware that they're crossing over into your energy field, except that they, you know, they can maybe feel the ripples or whatever. But some densities don't even aren't even aware that they're creating any kind of a hubbub, you know.
Yeah.
But when you
yeah.
have a when you have a thing like this where somebody says, and this happened and that happened and this is how it all worked out, what you're doing is you're taking multidimensionality and you're applying it specifically, and it's like you're bringing your clip art in and you're putting together an outcome. And it's a story, and many of what we talk about, our lives are all stories to be told. I remember that old, I don't know if you're old enough to remember that old show, there are many stories in the Naked City, and this has been one of them. It goes back
to... Oh,
the
Dragnet?
Well, that it was about the time of Dragnet, but it was called
Okay,
Naked
that's
City.
What it... Okay, oh,
and it would
okay,
always start
okay.
off with, you'd see this aerial view of, like, New York City or L.A. or somewhere, and it would say,
okay,
there are many stories in the Naked City, and this is one of them.
I've heard that. I just didn't know where it was from, so, yeah.
And what,
but
you
probably
know, and
on TV land.
What interested me was then a couple of weeks later, after this channeling came out,
okay.
there was another channel who was channeling Ashtar.
Okay.
And that channeling was not necessarily in complete alignment with this one. And so the
oh.
question that was presented to Susie, I think, or whoever was bringing this forward, again, I just get bits and pieces of this, but whatever parts of them that interest me, I just kind of hang on to.
Okay.
But there was a situation that said, well, which one is really Ashtar? Which one is do we believe? Is this Ashtar or is that Ashtar? I mean, who the heck is
right.
Ashtar talking about here? And the answer to that from a reconnection standpoint is they both are.
Mm.
Because just as you're multidimensional and I'm multidimensional, so are all these other beings as well.
Right.
So that there are literally a host of them. Ready to be encountered and listened to and learned from. And it's, do you hear a little echo in the background?
I don't.
Maybe I'll change lines here. Hang on one second.
Okay, no problem. And if you need to call back in, we can do that as well as an option.
I can do that. Let's try this for a while. I don't hear it back there now.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I don't hear it because it sounded like I was talking after myself.
Yeah, no, that's,
which,
yeah. Well, and we're speaking
that's very multidimensional, too.
But that doesn't necessarily mean we need it in the audio for ourselves. So,
yeah,
right
we
on.
Don't need it in the audio, right.
Yeah.
So,
multidimensional
Ashtar.
There
it is again. Yeah, there it is again.
Is there, you want to call
so
back?
Which, You know, I might do that. Let me do that.
Okay, just call back
say
in.
Say something brilliant, and I'll call you, and I'll call him.
I'll say something brilliant. Brilliant.
Everything
no,
you
Daniel's said. Daniel's going to call back in. That's brilliant.
Okay, thanks.
Very nice. Very nice. We'll be here. So Daniel will call back in. Why doesn't it surprise me that we had an echo? Of course, we're speaking on multi-dimension. You know, it's so interesting, too, because I went into the forest last year, and, you know, at some point I'll probably give a show about this, but I went through a portal, and I literally, the only reason why I know I went through a portal is because I ended up 20 miles away from my car and had to, I was in the forest for 9 hours and actually, you know, pretty much begged a wonderful couple with a dog to please save me. I was in the Twilight Zone. So, Yeah, no, because it's not, because that's why you know about, the, you know, planes disappearing and stuff. I mean, come on, the Bermuda Triangle, there's been all sorts of wormholes and portals on our planet.
Absolutely.
And,
well, we did a whole series on those, didn't we? We had a fun time with transportals.
Oh, we did. That's right.
Yeah,
Yes. Well, and that was before my experience, but nonetheless, it was, well, see, it almost feels like, well, see, you talk about it, and then you have an experience.
Yeah, you just mention it, and it's there, and all of a sudden, it's in your universe.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't be surprised for those who are listening who may feel attracted to or interested in the depth of this experience of multidimensionality, that you wouldn't be surprised to have some experiences where you feel like you've been taken somewhere on a journey.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely.
And then brought back and dropped like in a meadow, like a ship took you for a journey and then dropped you back in the meadow.
Well, and any time you have time, time doesn't run, you know, you have time lapses or, you lose time. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, recently I definitely find myself, it seems, I don't know if it's because I'm hanging out with Jeannie, who is my boyfriend's mother who has the dementia, but I definitely go in and out of awareness and presence. And you know, I'm not frightened by it. I kind of chuckle at it and go, wow, okay, you were definitely somewhere, because, like, I'll just notice, you know, 10 minutes has gone by on the clock, and it's like, I truly am like, well, I don't even know where I just was, but okay, I'm back. You know, so.
Or people who start driving somewhere, and then all of a sudden they're there, and they don't know how they got there.
Absolutely.
Which is an
It happens,
amazing,
I think, a lot when people drive. Yes, yes.
So anyway, we're talking about
307
we're talking
or
about the different Ashtars, you know, the many Ashtars.
Right.
And this is also mentioned in the Bible, in the New Testament, where they're talking about in the last days prophets will come, and they usually use the expression there will be many Jesuses.
Okay.
People who will come along and say this and say that, but don't, you know, you'll know them by their fruits and all this sort of stuff. But that comes from a separation paradigm.
Okay.
Like he said, I didn't come to bring peace but a sword. And that was the beginning of 2,000 years of separation, you know, where we focused, the Piscean Age, where we focused and separated and compartmentalized, and that was our journey. And now we're on a new journey, the Aquarian journey, where that which was contained is now being poured forth and given freedom, free flow, so to speak.
Nice. Nice.
Hopefully not too quickly, you know, so that we feel like we're swept away, but then fast enough so that we can sometimes feel like we're swept away. I mean, that's fun, too.
Yeah, no, right on. I'm thinking not too quickly so we don't, you know, implode.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Implode, explode, deplode.
Have
Mother
a cup
load.
Of tea and call it a day.
So then, you know, this comes up to the idea of the O.J. Simpson trial. You know,
okay.
There was another big question mark, you know, in the national mind. Did he do it or didn't he do it? You know, everybody seemed convinced that he did, but he got off. But then later he got convicted in a civil court, and then eventually ended up in jail just because he's a knucklehead. I mean, you know.
Our
knuckleheaded aspect. But the idea is that, well, maybe he really needed that experience of containment, you know, for that period of time.
Mm.
And he knew it, and so he set himself up for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point mm-hmm. being is that people said, did he do it or didn't he? And in the multiverse, there is an equal number of universes where he did it, equal number where he didn't. And each one has its own storyline and plot. And you can follow it if you want to. So that everybody can dial in to that level, whatever it is. It's as though, you know, the multiverse is a radio. And each station that's playing on the radio dial is its own distinct universe, its own distinct reality base. And if you want to move from one reality base to another, you basically change the channel.
Okay, I got a quick question. Well, not a quick question, but it came into my head quickly. So can two people who experience something together actually have one person experience it to a fruition paradoxically to the other person?
You mean, can one person where it goes one way and the other person doesn't experience it that way?
Correct.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That would make for an interesting life.
You ask three people their opinion, you'll sometimes get five opinions. You know?
they're giving birth to themselves.
Yeah, that's the way it is nowadays. It's like everybody, they go, well, it could be, or, you know. And that's
right.
where we're going, you know. We're going into a place where black and white is turning into one big gray.
Right.
And then the gray fades into different colors and get our own little rainbow trail, rainbow bridge. So it becomes our privilege, our excitement as citizens of the multiverse to we're no longer trapped by the rules and regs of 3D, except to the degree we want to or need to be to complete our journey here.
Okay,
so
right
even
on.
Though I know certain things are only illusion from the standpoint of limitation.
Okay.
They won't seem illusory to me, and they'll stay intact because they're like seatbelts in a ride that I'm going to stay on until they no longer is useful. And then all of a sudden the seatbelts fly off and I jump out of the ride and I'm on to the next attraction on the boardwalk.
And so what, your witness self tells you that, in other words, you're still playing out something that needs to be played out for your experience, but you already recognize that it's a belief and not a truth, per se?
No, I recognize it's all truth. But one of them is relevant to my experience and another isn't.
Okay.
And so I can let it go.
Okay.
Now, if there's some reason I can't let it go, then I have to consider the idea that there's some part of me to which it is relevant. I just haven't recognized that part yet.
Okay. No, that makes perfect sense.
So you have to discover what that part is and make friends with it. And this is where the process is like voice dialogue or...
Exactly.
Channel writing, automatic writing.
Yes, yes. Well, the first thing that came up to me is chemtrails. Where some people, you know, it's freaking them out, and some people it doesn't seem to be affecting them.
Right, right.
Yes.
And again, that's all about, usually it has a personal metaphoric symbology in the lives of the people it affects. Or doesn't affect.
Okay.
And so the people who are affected by chemtrails need to deal with this idea, particularly the ones who are conspiratorial in their orientation.
Okay.
The government is out to get me.
Yeah.
Now, when I take that metaphor and personalize it, bring it into myself, I have to say to myself, well, what is the government of me?
Okay.
And in many ways, we would say my conscious mind, my intellect, my intentions, my goals. So that's the administration of what's going on. Then when I open up to the idea that there might be a dark government, a shadow government, that's also affecting what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
that can be so unnerving, so disturbing that I'll project it out into my world so that I'll see that everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean it's not true? No, because everything I believe, everything I imagine to be true has its reality in the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
So there are government conspiracies in the multiverse. There are secret cabals, and there are men in black, and there are cattle mutilations,
right.
this sort of stuff. There are grays and there are abductions. But what we're not dealing with is the idea that those parts that are abducting and the parts that are being abducted are the same being. They're just a fragmentation of that being into a particular reality base so that we can learn a lesson, have an experience.
Right on. Some of us are approaching that both the enemy or the victor and the victimizer are one. And I'm referencing myself, of course. Because, it's what I came back to do radio. You know, when I came back, it was, after all the anger, I really recognized that the triggers were only there to get the energy moving in me, but ultimately it was all me. It had nothing to do, I'll speak to people, and I can see them, the words I use is hemorrhaging energetically, trying to, catch their partner in a lie or prove something that's been, said is this way. And it's like all this energy is expelled on the outside world instead of the inside world getting to know self in all this as just a reflection of self.
Yeah, and the reflection is usually backwards, just like a mirror.
Yes.
So when we, for instance, when a person looks outside and sees someone who they think is cheating on their relationship.
Okay.
I hate that word.
But don't use that word then.
Yeah. Well, I use it because so many people use it when I say I hate that word in application of relationships, because I think the whole idea of making this commitment that you're going to be true to this situation is cheating yourself, because
the situation potential.
How do you know what you're going to do or who you are or what you're going to be 5 years down the line or 10 years?
No, right on, right on.
So, the point being is, and it also inhibits you, because if you're holding yourself in that space to be that person, then what about all the other opportunities and the developments that could, in fact, really nurture and empower your partner as he or she watches you go through it?
Right.
So I had a girlfriend once who forever shall dwell in a special temple in my heart, because I was talking to her in a moment of madness. You don't do this usually. We don't talk about old girlfriends with new girlfriends.
Okay.
But in this particular thing, we were driving along. We were in downtown Seattle, and I was telling her about this woman that I had been really interested in, and da 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 da, and this, that, and the other. And she goes, "Well, tell me, what was she like?" You know. So I tell her more, and part of me, a little voice, is going, "Don't do this. You're going to get in trouble."
This is shaky ground.
You're on shaky ground. And suddenly she looked at me and she said, "You think I would like her?"
Oh, wow.
And let me tell you, that burned through me like a hot ember. It was like, wow, the value of your stock just went way up. Because all of a sudden she was saying to me, even if it means you're with someone else, it means that you're there because you're learning and growing, and I want to be part of that. I don't want to deny you that. I want to share that.
Yes.
Now, that being said, I'll also say that over the course of my lifetime, I've worked with the idea of polyamory or multiple relationships, intimate relationships, and all that I've ended up with is confused.
Oh, okay.
Confused and somewhat frustrated. So that doesn't mean I didn't, wouldn't, or couldn't do it again, but it just means that I haven't seen in this current vibration, in my vibration, that it works for me, but not for any kind of right or wrong purpose. It's just more along the line of I know myself and I know what I have energy and focus to handle and what I don't, you know.
Well, and I can tell you that you gave me a reading once that I had the nature, for me, until I was in my late 40s, or early 40s, I pretty much always had to have two men in my life. And, you know, I was like, I'd break up with one and go be with the other and then be with him. And when I first met Scott, my boyfriend now, I used to do that. And in your session, you went, that's wonderful. You helped me understand not to feel guilt about it, which was truly a pivotal moment in the session for me, in my life, because it just really, and if I look at myself now, what I do now, see, I'm getting older. I'm just not as sexually active as I was. So now I'm just friends with everybody. I can have wonderful relationships because I don't need the sex so much. I just need the interaction with the being.
Yeah.
You know, so now, quote unquote, I'm not cheating.
So to speak.
so to speak.
Now, the point is that there are people who never climb into bed or never even touch each other in certain ways or certain places, but they share on such a level that it can fry the air around them, you know. But
what
the
do you
point
mean, fry
is that... Meaning it, everything gets heated up to the point where they might as well be in bed.
Oh, I see.
You know?
Yes. No,
they might as
well be
going at it under the sheets.
Okay.
But the point is,
right.
The point is that if that kind of heat's being generated, then that could keep a whole town warm, and why would you want to stop that? Something like that, you know?
Yeah,
but,
well, everything
you know,
should
you
just
look,
be
you look at our modern-day TV or movies or whatever, and it seems to be built around that whole conflict of, do I be true to this, or do I take that path, or do I do this? And again, the multiverse says, it's all real. It's all good. It's,
Yeah.
But the question is it real? The question is it relevant to your journey? And you'll find that out, but usually only when you're actually giving yourself permission to experience it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you close the door before you go start walking down the path, you won't know that maybe that wasn't your path anyway. But if you have the freedom to be able to wander down that path a little bit, you'll probably in many instances return on your own.
Yes.
And say no, that's
absolutely
not what I want.
Absolutely.
And that will be solid. That will be
well,
reliable,
it's a knowing,
because it will be something that you know rather than something
exactly
you thought.
Exactly. Yes,
look,
I've lived
that.
Look,
these are applications of multidimensionality in everyday life. When we allow for the idea that if we're always worried about if people are lying to us,
okay,
you know, in the multiverse there are no lies. There are just alternative universes, alternative versions of it. So whatever a person tells you, they're speaking about a universe that actually exists. Now, what their motivation for doing that is, that's their business.
Mm.
I mean, what the way you see their motivation for doing that is your business. Because once again, remember what we said, when I'm judging another person, what I'm saying is this is what it would mean if I was doing that.
Correct.
And to take it one step further, oftentimes it says, I'd like to do that, but I'm afraid. Or I am doing that, and I'm in denial about it. That's why this person is walking past me going, hi, see me doing this? So are you.
I'll be honest with you. I find that a lot in the quote-unquote elderly circles that I'm, you know, exposed to because of Jeannie. There's a lot of, you know, they say one thing and they do another. And
that's
it's
what causes the reconnection. Say that's what causes the rumbling down below in the spirituality and sex. You say one thing, you do another.
And do another. Yes. No. And that's when my energy goes bonkers. But I'm not looking to heal the elderly community on that level. I'm just looking to keep sanity and take good care of Jeannie and You know, like I tell my close circle friends, you know, I'd rather have them think I'm crazy because this way they avoid me.
Well, and they
that,
say, you know, I heard one guy say it very, very, very clearly. He said, there is a lot of bed hopping going on in the rest home community. Usually it's just, usually it's just people looking for a dry place to sleep, you know. So thankfully, just when we get to a place where we probably wouldn't have enough energy to follow through on all that, that whole idea wanes anyway in favor of more practical things like, you know, having a good elimination period in your day.
That was cute. Very good. But indeed,
or being able
indeed,
to keep
I mean,
your lunch down or so on and so forth. But,
right.
Yeah, that,
right.
I heard that of an elderly guy got up and did a comedy set one night, and he said that.
That's a great line. I'm going to actually tell Jeannie that. She'll like it. She'll find that amusing. I know that, yes.
And it was interesting, too, because my dad in the last months of his life was at one of those facilities. And
hospice?
It was actually a rest home. It was in a rest home.
Oh, okay.
But he was too agitated being at home. He kept everybody in an uproar, including himself. He couldn't rest.
Mm.
So finally, when he was out of his environment into somebody else's, it became much better, much easier for him to do
nice.
What he did.
Okay. Right on.
But, and that's the thing. As we go through our life cycles, we come in with a very vivid memory of all of this stuff we're talking about, you know, the multiple variation of everything. And actually, we come in very much with the idea of the oneness, the unity of it all.
Mm.
So that when a child is, an infant, is first at home, there's the feeling in that infant like everything and everyone is a part of himself or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sometimes why infants will cry so desperately when they're home, I believe, is that when mother doesn't come when she's called, it's the equivalent of trying to move your hand and your hand won't move.
Right.
And, you know, you just think of the panic that would happen if you're used to being able to say to your hand, move hand, and it moves.
And it moves, exactly.
And suddenly she doesn't, and all of a sudden it's terrifying because what's happened to my hand? What's happened to my foot? My universe isn't obeying me anymore. You know?
Exactly. That's
and
what
you
I heard
can imagine
is actually
those
with...
first...
Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and so as we grow older, we try to quest for that sense of control, that sense of purpose, that sense of mission, whether it's a simple one or a very ornate one, whether it's humanitarian or personal, whatever. We try to get where we want to get. And then once we get there, there's this waning of the physical focus and the importance of all that in favor of the realization of our mortality, which then causes us to ponder the idea of our immortality.
Mm.
And as the physical body wanes, the spirit lights up and becomes more and more vivid, the world of the spirit. And that would be in a very kind and benevolent transitional phase. For some people, there's a lot of darkness there before the light comes on. Sometimes right up to the end. You know, they have
you're
to
speaking
have
to one of them. There's a lot of darkness in me. I just started early. I mean, even though I'll tell you that the candida that I'm dealing with, I realize is candida is actually the fungus that is found in your system that when the body is dead, its purpose is to, you know, get rid of the body. So what's so funny is I'm so attracted to shadow dancing, which I believe is kind of like what you were saying, that as you come near death, you know, our shadows come up and, you know, I think they come up for the review to be ultimately just forgiven. And, you know, it's cool. You know, the darkness happened. It's all right. We're eternal. Get over it. We'll play again next time. And
by the way, here's what was going on behind that darkness, you know, turn on the light.
Exactly. And it's usually unconditionally loving. I mean, from all parties. But it's interesting because I'm doing, you know, a lot of shadow work and I'm just now getting rid of the candida so now it's almost like I get a renewal on life with the healing of, you know, like I died, you know, but I didn't have to die just yet. You know, I did, but I didn't. You know, it's always tough to explain how, because part of me died, which is, I think, the candida part. We said, hey, not yet. We've still got some healthy years here. Back off.
And that's all part of a process, you know, where you go on that amusement park ride called the Candida Journey.
Yes.
And, you know, if you've read any of Dr. Crook's book about, you know, all of that stuff and the blood sugar and the whole deal, it's a trip to see as we go through these various phases of the medical healing process.
Absolutely.
Not only as individuals, but as a collective.
Agreed.
These things come and go like waves on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And people's attention rises and falls with it.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very powerful time for me. I've never been so fulfilled in the now moment. I'm not chasing anything. But my knowing is that I know when I'm done with this lifetime for real, when I'm done with this body, I will go on to the next leg of my journey, which will be, I'll complete the first, second, third, and fourth dimension, and, you know, I'm going to come out the other end in the fifth dimension. That's been my intention for closing in on 20 years now, and, you know, I feel pretty confident that what was necessary to get done, I'm doing, and it's an ironic thing because I'm dealing with a lot of darkness. When you said about redefining fulfillment, I've been working a lot with redefining happiness because I spend a lot of time in the uncomfortable emotions, but I'm happy spending time in the uncomfortable emotions because as I balance them out and come to peace with them, it helps me find the confidence or reveal the confidence that indeed I'm going to be done with the first four dimensions. I just can't be more pleased with that. So
it's interesting in light of your talking about all the work you're doing with Candida when you talk about coming out the other end of life.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I think that's an interesting visual there. but the whole idea is that whenever we complete a phase and we can automatically feel ourselves turning like a rudder turning into a different direction. We go out on the ocean and do our thing, and it almost seems like that life that we had lived before is a whole other life.
Absolutely.
I've gone through what I call epochs of my life, 10-year increments sometimes, where, you know, it'll just seem like that is all that is of my life. And then suddenly it's gone, and I'm in another place, and I think, did I die? Did I go to another place? And in essence, well, I think they said physically our body replaces, every cell in our body replaces itself every 7 years.
Yep.
So that we are literally different people. And I've experienced it more like 10, which would be fine. You know, I'm a bigger guy, so I move a little slower than 7 years. Maybe 10 years.
Okay.
I like to sightsee, stop, take some pictures, have a hot dog, you know.
Right on, Dan.
But
well, and you know, but don't you believe that there's also the whole idea of I've had experiences where I'm driving my car, I'm messing with the radio, I look up, there's a telephone pole in front of me. I'm a smart enough girl to know the physics of time and space. I'm gonna hit the pole. There's just, no matter how quickly I turn the wheel, there's just not enough room for me to move the car and not hit the pole. And the next second, I'm 15 feet down the road, I'm driving, continuing driving. You know, and that's only one, you know, and I really believe from what I've listened to from other beings and channelings and all of it, is that I did die, but the truth is it's not my journey to die at that moment, so get back out there, and they put me back out there, whoever they
are.
Well, and
there's another whole subject to open up, you know, what is death like when we talk about the other side?
Okay.
And that was part in there. What is it? What is on the other side? And you say, well, the other side of what? The other side of the veil that you've put up to keep away the rest of what is. And so what's on the other side? Whatever you want. Or whatever you fear, depending on what your journey is. If you're looking to have a thrill ride and a little bit of suspense, a little horror, then whatever you fear is going to be there. And if you're looking to have a joy ride, then it's going to be a joyful thing. But whatever is on the other side of that, rest assured, it's you, and it's going to be a trip. You know, you're going to take a trip there. It's going to have fun. But on the other side of the veil, there's this kind of nondescript energy, which we actually picture that in the human body in the form of fat.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the Reconnections talk about fat as being non-differentiated potential, energy potential, undifferentiated energy potential, which says
okay, wait,
it's
just in other words, what does that mean? What is undifferentiated?
Well, it's just, it's a building block of what? It's ready to be transformed into whatever. It's ready to be burned up in the fireplace, or it's ready to be applied and turned into this or that. It's ready, you know, it's ready to be applied.
I see, okay. Oh,
and
interesting.
It's also very symbolic of people who carry with them actual archives of various types of energies. The only way they can portray that for themselves on the physical plane is, you know, physical potentiated, non-differentiated potential, energy potential, or fat, they call fat.
Wow. And you know why that's so interesting? Because I've always said whales and elephants, who are clearly, you know, heavy physical mammals, and they're so wise. You know,
well, that's because they have
their
carrying around the whole library
with them. Well, definitely.
Some little cheetah's just got, you know, maybe the section on adventure, but the elephant's got, you know, he's got the whole upper portion of the library he's carrying around with him.
Yeah. Well, and at least the whale was, you know, wise enough to say, hey, throw me in the water, give me some buoyancy.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that there's no one that's better than the other, although we make that true sometimes in our society.
Yeah.
We have desired, preferred, lauded parts of ourselves, and then we have parts that are still scorned.
60 seconds.
Don't worry about that, Daniel. We'll end when we want to end, so keep going.
That's right. That's
right. Yes.
So there are parts of us that are scorned, and then parts of us that are exalted. But all that can be flip-flopped in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. All we just change the channel, go to a different dimension.
And yeah, right on. Which is now. All right, now we're gonna do another show, correct? A continuation of this show.
It seems like we usually do.
Well,
haven't been together.
I'll be honest
for a while.
With you. Yeah, no, and definitely. First of all, I would love to get deeper into the whole other side, you know, of death. That just seems, I'm very interested in that topic. I know a lot of people are.
10 seconds.
So I would like to get more into that. And we kind of like to go to from your articles.
There's a multidimensionality link on the site, the Reconnection site, and also on the Star Children. And there's also a death and dying part if you're interested in getting a little preview. But that's a subject that's also being added to and expanded quite a bit of late as we see all these different ideas coming through, like cryogenic storage or this new movie that's coming out where they talk about translating a human mind into a cybernetic system.
Yeah, I've heard about that. That's interesting.
And then there's that movie Her, where Joaquin Phoenix plays this guy who falls in love with an operating system, and that's a trip too. So.
Yeah, well, that's that's very transhuman. That's what I.
And interestingly enough, she left him because he was too slow for her. After she got turned on and tuned in, she learned her way around things, and then she said, "I'm sorry, I can't hang out with you. I've got 9 other friends going on here while we're talking." And he goes, "You do?" You know, and so she outgrew him, so to speak. and
well,
went on. And that's
that.
Sort
I,
of
I
like.
I've done that myself.
That's what they're afraid of, you know, when they talk about mixing cybernetic systems and consciousness, which goes all the way back to the 60s to one of my favorite writers, a guy named Maxwell Malt, who wrote a book called Psycho-Cybernetics, which was one of the first books that was ever explored the idea of consciousness and computers and how all that works, you know. The Reconnections tell us we didn't create computers out of nothing. We remembered them based on our knowledge of how consciousness works.
Uh-huh.
So we have files, and we have and we have cutting and pasting of all this kind of downloads and all that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful language, and everybody all over the world understands that language. I once told one of my computer gurus, I said, I think one day we're all going to speak to each other in Microsoft, and he said, oh, God help us.
Yeah, I agree with him.
God help us.
Well, you know, but on that same thought, how about children that are, I've seen, like, four-year-olds, you give them a cell phone, you go, hey, can you get this, you know, app running for me? Without any assistance from, you know, reading a manual, they literally
they just
know how the phone works. Yeah.
Yeah, they know how it works. Well,
they're,
you know, and that's,
to
that's
know
that
it.
New strain of energy coming in. I call them the prototype, you know, what is it called? Metahuman, the metahuman prototype.
Nice.
Meta
nice.
Being beyond human, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And bridge people.
The bridge
well,
people,
I think
right
that's
on.
Enough. I think we probably split a few heads open tonight. I know mine is. It's all over the place now. I've got a good collection.
Oh, okay, but it begs the question. So do you feel energized or do you feel tired?
I feel energized.
Yes, that was my – I was hoping for that. Good.
Yeah.
Good. So you enjoy
you know,
the rest of your night.
We call it a touch of Goldie.
I do so love being in your presence and your company. Always a pleasure.
And back to you. Thanks for having me.
We'll let them – oh, thank you. We'll let the audience digest this for a couple of weeks. And do me a favor, you get a hold of me when it's good for you, and no matter when it's good for you, we'll make it happen.
Perfect. Thank you, dear.
My pleasure. Thank you for
night
listening,
all.
Everybody. Good night. Mm-hmm. Have a great night. You too, Daniel. I love you, sweetheart.
Okay. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You've been experiencing Another Reality Show with Golden Hawk. Another Reality Show is live Thursdays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, or listen and be enlightened anytime that works for you. Questions or comments? Email the show, goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. That's goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. Also, visit us on the web at www.anotherrealityshow.com. Remember, all you rule breakers, misfits, troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists, everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what is right with you. You see things others don't. You're hardwired to change the world. And unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible and you were born to be a revolutionary. And here at Another Reality Show, we salute you. Stay amazing and keep on flying. Good night.